Chemical Weapons, a Civil Defense Primer. A worldwide guerrilla war has erupted. Authorities admit that civil defense is not prepared for biological or nuclear attack. But the terrorist arsenal is likely to include chemicals to create deaths, injuries, or horror. The recent discovery in Britain of the toxic chemical osmium tetroxide, along with the fertilizer bomb materials, is just one of a series of warning signs about chemical weapons plans by Muslim extremists. Consider also, the 1993 World Trade Center bomb also contained various toxic chemicals produced in smoke following the explosion. It was not simply a conventional explosive. Many people do not realize this fact from the media reports. Also, less educated extremists are far more likely to be familiar with deadly pesticides used in agriculture, which are popular for suicides in third world countries, like Pakistan, which harbor some terrorists. Also, raids on Al-Qaeda hideouts have produced numerous manuals for chemical attacks, and the Bin Laden Group's plans for chemical weapons are well known. The important point is that chemical weapons do not need to be prepared in a sophisticated laboratory, or even shipped into the country from abroad. They are available in common industrial and agricultural products in the target country, and in almost every Western city. Most such chemicals are completely uncontrolled, unmonitored, and unguarded. The use of commercial jets against the World Trade Towers shows us we need to rethink how our common social processes can be used against us. Target number one is chlorine. Chlorine is a liquid which becomes a gas at normal temperatures above freezing. Although used in a wide range of industrial and municipal processes, chlorine has also been used as a chemical weapon in World War I. It was released by the Germans into the trenches occupied by Algerian and Canadian troops with deadly results. After that, it was heavily used by all sides. Chlorine is heavier than air, so it spreads according to A, the wind direction, and B, simple geography. Chlorine gas seeks low spaces like basements, underground garages, ditches, and so on. A terrorist would seek the largest volume of chlorine available. In a city like Vancouver, Canada, for example, that would mean chlorine production facility right on the city waterfront. An immediate study and action to defend all chlorine plants is imperative. Could a couple of armed men force their way into a chlorine plant? In fact, unarmed men could easily do it. Can someone drive a truck bomb through those flimsy fences directly to the plant? Are the rail entrances barricaded against a stolen rail-capable truck? In the late 1980s, the nonviolent environmental organization Greenpeace drove a crew in a Zodiac boat straight into the chlorine plant in Vancouver, Canada. They mounted the loading cranes and simultaneously blockaded the rail lines so no more chlorine could be taken out of the plant. Greenpeace has a long campaign against chlorine as a deadly chemical weapon and as a source of countless cancer-causing chemicals used by consumers and industry. A less benevolent group could have placed explosives or might have released massive amounts of chlorine on the undefended city. Of course, Greenpeace was trying to warn us about the risks of producing a chemical weapon in a city. What would happen if a light plane or an airliner crashed into the plant? Are there emergency plans to stop production and quickly move all stored chlorine out of the city? All chlorine storage areas within every city need to be mapped out and secured. Other examples include pulp and paper mills where tank car loads of chlorine are misused to bleach paper, municipal water chlorination plants, and even large swimming pools all store potential chemical weapons in bulk. A water chlorination plant is a double target. Not only could the chlorine be released, but the now unchlorinated water could be poisoned with a bacteriological weapon. Finally, emergency preparedness teams need to coordinate with the railways to ensure that chlorine and other highly toxic chemicals are tracked, with the aim to move them out of the city as high-priority freight. chlorine and other possible chemical rail tankers should not be left on sidings with heavily populated zones. I personally have walked up to unguarded and unnoticed chlorine tank cars just sitting on a siding. Easy prey. Could a terrorist just break open a lock and then open a valve to release chlorine? The recent attacks on railways in Spain and the bombs found on the French railway system show that poisonous chemicals on our rail system could be a terrorist target. Or they may be involved in a simple industrial accident, such as the massive chlorine fire in a swimming pool supply depot in Georgia that caused the evacuation of thousands of people. We need to get smarter, fast. Are we really prepared for a purposeful derailment of a major chlorine shipment through your city? Keep in mind that a chlorine railway tanker accident in the city of Mississauga, Ontario, in the 1970s, forced the sudden evacuation of 250,000 people. Other chlorine rail accidents have killed more than 1,000 people in the Soviet Union and in Iran. To some degree, we can predict when a chlorine or other poison gas attack is more likely, according to local weather, especially wind conditions, rain, and warmer temperatures. A successful chlorine attack cannot occur on a cold winter day, for example. This kind of knowledge could be important in times of high alert or suspected terrorist activity. What about civil defense for chlorine? Chlorine is widely used in our society to sanitize municipal water, to bleach pulp and paper, for municipal swimming pools, to make polyvinyl chloride and many other building products, and so on. Consumers even buy it for their homes and put it in their toilets. Yet first responders and the public have almost no information on chlorine civil defense in case of a major accident or terrorist attack.
EcoShock Radio, broadcast and podcast. Find us on the web at ecoshock.org.
The first and most difficult step in civil defense against chemical weapons is to defuse the terror by educating first responders and the public to the possibility of chemicals as part of an attack. Part of the success of the September 11th attack was our inability to conceive of it. Americans hadn't experienced anything like it. They couldn't believe and did not act quickly. As chemical weapons have hardly ever been used in North America, citizens have no experience. In fact, our best guides to civil defense against potential chemical weapons, such as chlorine, comes from a century ago, from World War I. An excellent study of that chemical warfare was done recently by a Canadian military historian. Tim Cook's book, No Place to Run, The Canadian Corps and Gas Warfare in the First World War, UBC Press, Vancouver, Canada, published in 1999. Incidentally, for better or for worse, this book is available to anyone at the public library. We need to begin a public discussion about chemical weapons so people are not completely victimized due to incomprehension. Citizens in such countries as Israel and South Korea are aware of such a possibility. They discuss it as part of civil defense and are encouraged by their governments to buy gas masks. The Korean economy has not been paralyzed by such discussions, and the Olympic Games were held there despite widespread public awareness of the threats posed by chemical weapons from nearby North Korea. As declared enemies of Western civilization have chemical weapons plans, they have the knowledge and they have the chemicals, we have to acknowledge reality and start talking about it. What can you do? Here is real civil defense information for chemical weapons. The first step of civil defense is to educate the public and yourself about a few basics that could potentially save many lives and reduce the feeling of powerlessness. These simple lessons from World War I could save your life. Learn how to defend yourself. Rule number one, avoid low places. The most likely chemical problem, whether accidental or terrorist, is chlorine, or a class of gases that behave similarly, including mustard gas. Any chemical weapon has to be heavier than air to function. Otherwise, the gas would simply rise up into the sky, away from its intended human victims. If people suspect a chemical attack, perhaps due to the smell or seeing others choking, for example, they must get out of the area, if possible, or at least get to a higher ground or even up to a building rooftop. Avoid at all costs low-lying and indoor spaces. This is obvious to experts, but the public does not know it, and authorities have not broadcast this simple defense information. Here is a further problem to think about in advance, now. Humans instinctually seek shelter in basements, underground, in ditches, and indoors when they sense danger. So the correct response to a chemical weapons attack is counterintuitive. If gas is involved, people must be directed away from shelter or any low-lying area and directed toward high ground, hills, or rooftops, assuming there is no fire in the building. Beyond the poison gas cloud, which may not be visible, people are safer outside in the open air rather than indoors. A terrorist, knowing these easily available facts about human responses, might combine a conventional explosive with a chemical weapons release. People would instinctively seek shelter from the explosion and then be killed or injured by the chemical component. Rule number 2. Don't run too far. War experience has shown the second defense measure is to teach people not to overexert themselves after a chemical attack. In panic, people tend to run as far away as possible, rather than merely as far as necessary. Exertion makes the impact of most chemical weapons much worse. The running person begins to choke on liquids produced in their own lungs, or, in the case of nerve agents, the agent is more widely distributed in the body by exercise. First responders and the populace must be taught to move away from the chemical weapons. Which way is the wind blowing? Where is the high ground? And then, rest. Once upwind and above ground, crowds of people may need to rest in the open air, not inside closed air spaces, to reduce injuries and death. Rule number 3. Rest upright. Once the possible chemical victim is resting, they must be kept in an upright position, whether sitting or standing, and prohibited from lying down. This is also counterintuitive, but it saved lives in World War I. People lying down tend to drown in their own fluids. Are ambulance drivers aware of this? Are police and firemen? In a massive attack, which swamps first responders, the public themselves need to be aware of this peculiarity of most chemical weapons. During the war, some gas victims, who may also go into convulsions or comas, and thus be unable to keep themselves upright, had to be tied up to fences or trees to keep them upright until medical help was available. If you keep yourself or your loved ones upright, your chances of surviving are greatly increased. Rule number 4. A homemade gas mask? Naturally, the best defense is a proper gas mask, but hardly anyone has one. Governments have discouraged gas mask purchases, perhaps to keep tear gas as a viable method for crowd control. But now, with the declared terrorist war, the situation has changed. Governments ought to encourage citizens to buy protective gas gear, as both Israel and South Korea have done. In the meantime, as a gas attack can occur whether we are ready or not, someone needs to add this new and helpful urban myth to the media. Believe it or not, urine can greatly reduce the effect of chlorine and some other chemicals. This simple chemical reaction was used for survival by Canadian soldiers in 1915 and afterward. The person urinated into a piece of cloth, stuffed the cloth into their mouth, pinched their nose closed, and breathed only through the mouth cloth. Urine contains chemicals which neutralize chlorine and some other chemicals. Naturally, this is an offensive-sounding step, likely to be laughed off as a civil defense measure, but this knowledge saves lives and can be leaked out unofficially through the press as a stopgap until real gas masks become acceptable and widespread. Can we afford to be squeamish about such a basic technique available on-site to anyone if it can save your life?
EcoShock Radio. Broadcast and podcast. Find us on the web at ecoshock.org.
Our biggest urban lesson in modern terrorist attacks was in the 1995 Tokyo subway attack by the Japanese cult Om Shinriko. This chemical weapons attack caused 12 deaths, thousands injured, and the city was psychologically damaged. The weapon was another heavier-than-air chemical, first developed in World War I, the nerve agent sarin. Japanese experts have since said that all the deaths were preventable with correct emergency response. The correct response to sarin and similar nerve agents is intubation, a medical procedure that opens blocked airways. This can and must be done immediately at the scene rather than later at the hospital. Sarin causes paralysis and thus stops breathing. Japanese doctors say with quick intubation, sarin victims never die. U.S. paramedics, unlike their Japanese counterparts, are authorized to do intubations on site. The other treatment for sarin is administration of PAM, P-A-M, a compound designed for pesticide poisonings. PAM is more likely stocked around agricultural area medical sites than in urban hospitals. Now city hospitals need to create PAM stockpiles. A second treatment is the anticonvulsant drug atropine, which is more commonly available, although the Japanese hospitals did not have enough atropine to treat the 5,000 people from the subway attacks. Even the less severely victims should get atropine treatment, say the Japanese, to avoid long-term effects. Does your city have enough atropine or PAM for a terrorist attack? Do doctors know they should treat even minimally gassed patients? If you think you have been gassed, you may ask for atropine or PAM treatment. Are first responders trained and authorized to do intubation? Are they equipped to do it for hundreds of people? Emergency planners need to stockpile and distribute large amounts of atropine injectors as a medical treatment for a chemical weapons attack. In the Middle East, where chemical weapons are known and have been used by many states, all U.S. troops in the Gulf War, and more recently military action in Iraq, were equipped with 3 atropine self-injectors. They were trained to help themselves and their comrades. Some Israelis have atropine injectors in their home medical kits. Do you? Thinking the unthinkable, the pigment bomb. Here's just one example of how we have to rethink our handling of common chemical products and our response to their misuse. The poison weapons of World War I took advantage of accidental discoveries. Lab workers and scientists discovered some artificial dyes derived from coal tar were highly toxic. In some cases, lab workers died at their benches just from inhaling or coming in contact with these artificial dyes. The old dyestuff industry, which provided colored dyes, and the chemical weapons program were at times indistinguishable. The modern terrorist version could be to mix such readily available coloring agents, pigments, into an explosive bomb or other scattering device. First responders and the public need to realize that a strangely colored or apparently paint-splattered scene may in fact be a chemical weapons attack. Such toxic pigments will transfer to responders or helpful citizens by contact with either clothing or skin. They can cause horrible, disfiguring injuries or death. The colorful signs of a pigment bomb are obvious, but again, the whole idea is not part of anyone's normal experience or training. The correct response is the same as for any hazardous chemical: full protective gear, stripping off all contaminated clothing immediately, and washing off all colored skin or equipment. Like the chemically related mustard gas, pigments can remain toxic for weeks or longer. The area has to be closed down and decontaminated. But unlike mustard gas, pigments are readily available from major paint factories, warehouses, and suppliers. Part of defense planning is to identify the most toxic pigments, withdraw them from the market or limit them if possible, and ensure they are stored in super-safe locations with surveillance. we need to implement a system to report any bulk or suspicious sales of paint pigments immediately to an emergency agency. Paint pigments need to be regulated and monitored, as we try to do with dynamite. Planting false lures. The publicity about osmium tetroxide in Britain, where bottles of it were shown on the nightly news, offers a technique for terrorist prevention. Of course, we must develop a system, in cooperation with industry, to identify and regulate the sales of most toxic chemicals and chemical weapons precursors. But a counter-terrorist agency could be proactive by releasing false information about a chemical, which is in reality not so dangerous, but which could act as a lure to a small-time terrorist or newly arrived foreign terrorists. These people, seeking information about possible chemical weapons, might be lured to internet sites or chemical companies to buy the dummy chemical weapon. Then they can be followed to find sleeper cells, cults, or individuals planning chemical attacks. Sales of osmium tetroxide would be a good place to start. Reduce terror by civil defense. Almost every Middle East state, from Sudan to Syria, to Iraq and Iran, are known to possess chemical weapons. Many of these states have already used them. Chemical weapons are known as the poor man's atomic bomb. These states, plus Pakistan, have produced radical scientists and extremists who are knowledgeable about chemical weapons and sworn to destruction of Western society. They are a likely source of chemical attacks in the West, and yet we remain too polite, or too afraid, to discuss how we can defend ourselves. Shall we wait until the public is panicked and outraged from the first major chemical attacks? Or should we prepare a public civil defense program now? Most analysts agree that chemical weapons are only really effective with surprise. Without the element of surprise, defense is always possible. Without civil defense and public education, surprise is completely available in the West to terrorists or hostile states or cults. Israel sells its citizens a relatively inexpensive protection kit for chemical attack, including a coverall suit, gloves, and a respirator. There are thousands of other aspects to counterterrorism for chemical weapons and to the development of civil defense. All I have tried to do here is to stimulate our bureaucrats, authorities, and you, the public, to react quickly to the imminent public threat posed by chemical weapons made from our own industrial products.
You've been listening to Chemical Weapons, a Civil Defense Primer. I'm Alex Smith. Visit us at www.ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock, like an electric shock, .org.